Hi, welcome to the Imperial MBA Women's Podcast. I'm Giulia Maccagno, and this week we will be discussing social impact with my fellow MBA student, Alberta Zafo-Zamor, and Aimé Rebecca, founder and CEO of Patapia Services. Social impact is an expression that we hear often nowadays, and it gains traction also in the business community in conjunction with the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and the Sustainable Development Goals. What we will discuss today is businesses that have social impact at the very core of their business strategy from the start. So this is not a nice add-on. It's really the core of what these businesses are doing and what these entrepreneurs are. So I am joined today by Alberta Zafo-Zamor. I will ask her to briefly introduce herself, and then we will let our guest introduce herself as well.
Hi, so my name is Alberta Zafo-Zamor, as you mentioned. I'm currently in the full-time MBA program at Imperial. So before joining Imperial, I worked in banking. I have 5 years combined experience in financial services. And I began my career in corporate and investment banking, developing relationships and providing debt slash lending to businesses within the services industry in Europe. I subsequently transitioned into impact investing, and I had the opportunity to catalyze purpose-driven investments for small and growing businesses in East Africa, specifically in Uganda and Kenya. I'm also the founder of an educational tuition and consulting company called Algebra in the City. And my goal with that is to liberalize education for students across various socioeconomic backgrounds. So I'm very excited to join this podcast with you all. Giulia, thank you. And Aimé, I'm really interested in your accomplishments and cannot wait to hear more.
Aimé, do you want to introduce yourself as well?
Hello, everyone. I'm happy to have me on this platform. I'm Aimé Rebecca, founder and CEO of Patapia. During entrepreneurship, I got a chance of getting a scholarship with an organization called Social Innovation Academy, whereby they give us skills of entrepreneurship and how we could change our challenges into solutions. I have entrepreneurship skills, mentorship, and coaching, which I'm using now to support my fellow refugees.
Thank you very much, Aimé. I'd like to say a couple of words about myself as well. So I have a PhD in sustainable development, and I'm currently pursuing my MBA degree at Imperial as well. I work at the European Investment Bank, supporting cities and local authorities develop and finance urban climate action projects. I would like to start this conversation by asking Aimé, you have an amazing path. You have told us about your experience first as a refugee and then as an entrepreneur. I would like to ask you a little bit more about your personal and professional journey. What led you to the creation of Patapia Services, and what did you experience? How did you come about the idea of creating this business?
Thank you so much. As I said, I'm a refugee in Uganda. I came to Uganda in 2010 from my home country, Congo. When I reached Uganda, it was hard for me, for all my family, because I remember we didn't know where we were going. We just find ourselves in Uganda. It was hard. I remember the first day we slept outside the church. We didn't know anyone, either we could talk to, we didn't know the language, which made us start looking for the way we could survive. My mom got a job where she worked as a household, but because of too much work, or a lot of work, she developed a back problem and she couldn't provide anymore for us. And all the responsibilities fell on me. As I was young, 14 years, I started looking for also a job so that my family could survive and even treat my mom. I went to people asking them for an opportunity of giving me a job, but I was young. I didn't have any skill because I didn't get the chance of continuing my studies when we came to the host country. I just stopped in senior two. Then I got a woman who really wanted to support us and was like, I don't know how I can support you, but I have my products. Can you really start selling, walk door to door and see if you can sell, then I give you some percentage on the things you are selling. It was like really an opportunity for me and for the whole family. I started working at that age of 14. It was really a young age, but unfortunately, the pay was really very, very low. And that means if I didn't sell anything, I'll not get anything. The only dream I had was of when I'll own my business. I could dream every day when I'm running my business. But with this opportunity business, I didn't manage to stay with my family. I could travel to different districts selling products, which was really very good and again bad for me because I was very exposed. I could sleep in lodges because I didn't really have where I could sleep. And I remember one day I was walking around with my product on the head. Then one man called me, was like, okay, they call us Batembei here. Mtembei, first come, I check your product. There was too much sun. Was like, okay, you extend this side so that I can have a look. When I entered in the house, he almost raped me, which was really challenging for me. I left, I went back home. I was very scared. I didn't want to go back doing that business, but I didn't have another option because if I don't do that business, how shall we survive? I continued doing the business. And one day I got an opportunity to have a scholarship at this organization, which calls Social Innovation Academy, which supports young marginalized to start their enterprises or to be social entrepreneurs. With that, I managed to get skills, mentorship skills, coaching, and there where I was getting training, they are telling us, like, you have challenges. Now, don't see those challenges as challenge, but change them into solutions. Wow, it was very amazing. I just looked behind what I had gone through and what my fellow refugees are going through. Because even when I was doing that business, I could meet my fellow women and young girls who are doing the same businesses. That means also the same things I was going through. That's how, with this opportunity skills, that's how I thought on how I could create something which could support these fellow refugees. Because we found out that refugees are doing this such businesses because they don't have access to financial support so that maybe they can get their own money or their own support and start their own businesses, which is safe or which can fully take care of their family. Refugees don't have collaterals, and most of financial institutions ask for collaterals so that they can or access loans or financial services. But as a refugee, you have anything. That means you don't have something you can give out as a collateral. And that's what the challenge we are having. Most of refugees had different life countries, and they didn't have, maybe they had their jobs, they had their good life, but when they reach here, they don't have skills like these small businesses. Now, that's why we thought we'd part up here, so that we can give refugees, women, skills and financial support so that they can also have a better life. Thank you.
Wow, you really gave me goosebumps. That's a fantastic story. Can you describe Patapia's business model? So you told us who your clients are, and you mentioned the issue of lending without collateral, which is not normally done by financial institutions. So, of course, people that are marginalized, vulnerable, or at risk of social exclusion hardly have access to conventional finance. So how do you solve this issue with Tapia?
Tapia works with refugee women. And for now, we are working in Kampala, Uganda, while we are looking of the way we could go even to the camps. How we give these women finance without collateral is we created some system which we called family groups, where we don't give to one person just the support. when those women come to us in that process of training, when we are giving them training, we put them in groups. And in those groups, that's where it's a group of five women. They act like a guarantor or a signatory to each other, whereby they are accountable for everything which will go on. They follow up with each one. In case that one woman doesn't pay, then that group has to see how they will pay that finance or that money.
This is very interesting. It's a nice way to spread a little bit the responsibility, and they exert some control on each other, I suppose, so that collectively they are able to pay back their loan. I would like to ask Alberta, maybe since you have experience in impact investing, what is your reaction to this from the point of view of the business model? What are the key things that you normally look at when considering an investment in a company like Patapia?
Yeah, I think obviously for social impact businesses, you have to look for how to measure that impact. And I think if you look at Patapia, it's quite evident that there's an actual group that is impacted. So clearly, you know, as soon as you sort of start looking at the company, immediately you kind of understand and can explain to investors the kind of social impact you have within the community. So I think that was one of the main key things. When I worked in sort of this impact investing firm, it was quite difficult to try and explain, or for companies to sort of explain their social impact returns beyond just providing jobs. But it has to be, what's going to happen to the community? What is that household income going to look like? And what's that going to translate in terms of GDP, in terms of the whole country? So I think what she's done is absolutely amazing. I mean, currently in Africa, you know, small and medium sort of enterprises create roughly, I think, 80% of the sort of formal employment opportunities. And so they're really important to sort of the economies. But unfortunately, there is that funding gap, right? Because debt in Africa is expensive. So now you have to kind of look at different types of financing options. So in doing that, what kind of options do you look at? So you can look at blended finance options. So that's where you do development finance and philanthropic financing and et cetera. But unfortunately, a lot of the traditional investors are a little bit too conservative to look at such businesses because they do provide sort of below the market returns. But I think when you look at social impact rather than sort of just the financial returns, in the long term, you will actually be doing something good for, you know, the emerging markets. Because when there's social stability and when there is a really robust private and public sector, returns will be strong. But at the moment, I think investors should be willing to, I guess, forgo some of these stringent financial returns models that they do have and also change their risk perception. But I think that Patapia is doing extraordinary at the moment and will definitely be, for a small impact advisory firm, I think they'll definitely be interested in that kind of business model to make it more feasible for individuals to gain access to financing and also to ultimately have impact in their community.
I totally agree. And I think another point is transaction costs of appraising each individual project, because I think one key issue is that these business models are not necessarily well understood by commercial banks, for instance. And commercial banks are, particularly in this period of crisis, very risk averse. The difficulty that you have as a traditional investor is really, how do you appraise your risk? So there is a question of, I think, modifying the risk assessment for this type of businesses. Aimé, I think one question I would like to ask you is about the results you have achieved so far. So when we talk about social impact, and Alberta was rightly mentioning the measurement of results, I think that's a very important point. So can you tell us a bit more about which results you have achieved so far? What are the indicators that you use to measure your performance, not only financially, but particularly on the social impact side?
We measure our impacts through looking at the women, how we have changed their lives. Like, we have the savings scheme whereby we train women or give them that idea of keep saving. And these women now open the accounts. And in those accounts, they save money which can help them in future. And we have so far 80 women who are saving money. And for really, it was hard to find a refugee woman even having $50 or just save the money which is there doing nothing. But now with Peer-to-Peer, with the training we give them, with the skills we give them and the saving scheme, they are able to save and to save their money, which maybe in future it can help them to grow. We have supported families, and now you see when a woman, a parent is working, most of children were not going to school, but these parents are able to pay school fees for their children, and now their children are going to school. That was one of our goals, something we wanted from day one, because that was one of the challenges I went through. I didn't continue my studies because my mom couldn't afford it. But now, with the support from Peer-to-Peer, women are able to work, refugees are able to work and support their family, take their children to school, provide for their family so that even the children can have a good health.
I'm really interested in what you mentioned about the other benefits, let's say. So not only you are helping them develop their own business, but you're also helping them support their family, which has, of course, health implication, education implications for their children. So I think that this is a very important point. And it comes back to what Alberta was mentioning before, how do we measure impact? The impacts can also be co-benefits that can be achieved through the main business of a company.
Yeah, we got women to, when we give them the finance, they start saving. With that saving, it can help us grow and give to more women who need our services, as they are also growing their saving. And at the end of the time, we give them their savings with some interest.
You lend them the money and at the same time hold their savings so that they can build some capital and potentially expand their business. That's very interesting. It's a nice combination of the lending model and also the saving aspect, which can be challenging in an environment where not everybody can open a bank account in a commercial bank. Can you please tell us a little bit more about what types of business your clients are developing?
These women come up with different businesses. As I told you before, supporting them with the finance, we first carry out a training so that they can come up with ideas. With our mentors and coaches, we go through those ideas and really see which idea should we support for now. Does it have everything which is needed? And they have different businesses. Some are selling things and others, they make some products like making clothes. Others make shoes. We give them the finance to buy materials. They make shoes, they take in the market. Others make clothes, bags, and others just sell normal things like food, fruits, shoes, and other different things.
How many people are working for Peer-to-Peer in terms of training, mentoring, supporting, or are you maybe outsourcing these services to another company? How does this work?
We have mentors. I use mentors for Social Innovation Academy, the organization which supported me, and they support me to come train the women mentoring, because there is other women which need coaching before even they start businesses, because they have some other mental problems. They first coach them, talk to them one-on-one. Yeah, I get volunteers. We get volunteers who can support us, work with. But apart from that, we are in team. We are three. Me and other two fellows.
Alberta, do you have any questions that you would like to ask?
Sure. I just had a question. Have you received any funding for your business?
Not really. We haven't received any funding. And that's what we are looking for, how we can really reach this so that we can grow the business. Yeah, because as I'm saying, we are working from home, we need a space where to work from, the working space where we can be training the women from, but we don't have, even now, the support, the finance, it's really still very small, whereby women per month, they save and they pay per month. Since when we give a woman money, we give them a period of 1 year. And in that 1 year, they keep paying slowly by slowly. That means with the money they pay and they are saving, they save. In 1 month, we are able to only support 4 women, which is really a small amount. And we have many women who keeps coming, looking for us for our support. But we haven't received the funding so that we can really go that far.
Have you applied for any funding or submitted your projects maybe to international financial institutions that work in Africa, or maybe looked for grant programs from the national government, for instance?
I keep looking for grant opportunities and applications, and we submit our proposal, and we had just started submitting our proposals.
What would you say are the main obstacles that you faced when you set up your business?
Of course, challenges are many, which comes mostly when you are just starting a business. But every time I could see really people who are waiting to see me changing their lives, every time I could see people really in need, people who deserve needs, people who want to change their lives, and I remember what I went through. That thing keeps motivates me. Every time I think of my life, what I went through when I just came, I really think of not stopping or not giving up. I think of going forward, change the lives of every refugee.
What I really like is that you are actually making a business and a successful business out of it. So I think this comes back to, we always hear this sentence about the triple bottom line, and this is it at the very essence. So you're talking about not only profit, but people first. And I personally am extremely impressed and inspired by this story. You were recently listed among the winners of the Meaningful Business 100, and this award celebrates successful leaders that exactly combine profit and purpose to achieve the UN Sustainable Development Goals. If you were to go back and talk to your younger self and give a piece of advice, what would you say? Or what would you say to any other young woman who consider launching their own company?
That's a really good question. One thing I'll tell my fellow women, even young girls, is to keep going. Nothing can stop us from achieving what we are supposed to achieve, because anything, you can't bring a reason that I failed to do this because I had this challenge, maybe because I was a refugee. No, it's not really possible. We need to stand, fight for our rights, fight to our destination. And change begins with me, with you. No one else will come to change our life or our world. We are the change we want to see. Women shouldn't just sit and wait for other people, or men, or even a refugee shouldn't sit, wait for someone, because I'm a refugee, I can't do this, I'm not allowed to do this. No, we can do everything. We are allowed to do everything. And if you have a passion, then nothing should stop your dream. Nothing should stop you from achieving what you are supposed to achieve. I think there is no difference between me and a man. What a man can do, then I can do it also. There is no difference. There is no difference. By the way, there is something I've even realized, that women are even more stronger than men, because what we overcome.
I also agree with Emma. I think women are incredibly strong, and I completely agree with everything she says. I think In terms of my career, I've been lucky to have been supported by men and women. But I think sometimes when there is a lack of representation in, you know, wherever you go, there is that, you know, strange feeling that you feel almost as if, almost like you don't belong. But I think maybe investing in, you know, more women within, you know, the corporate ladder right at the top, and would be quite beneficial to any system. But I definitely agree with Amy in saying that women are extremely strong. I think I'm looking at all the women in my life and also within the workplace, I've really been inspired by, you know, being able to balance, you know, work and family, and also being able to do extremely well in their career has been very inspiring for me to see.
In addition, why did we think of working with women? Because we are really supporting women, not men. Because we realize that most of men who comes, like, they don't take care of their family. They end up leaving their family, and women are the one who continue struggling for the family.
I agree. I think statistically, it's been proven that African women sort of make a large part of the economy. Is because they invest in social projects, they invest in their families. And I think a lot of men rather invest in like business. And yes, that is great. But I think if you lock up all your money or investment in business, you're not really growing the whole economy. So that's why African women, you know, it's very important that we invest in them, because, you know, metrics do show that they do contribute significantly within, you know, the social development of a country.
I'd like to echo that. And not only for African women, but from my own personal experience, I think that women can demonstrate an attention to detail and to the broader picture, which is uncommon. And I've seen a number of leaders in the business sector, but also in the public sector, who are women and who really inspire me, because they don't compromise between caring about people and achieving results. So I am very much an advocate for the combination of the two, because I really think that this brings out the most value, not only for the person who starts a business.
Yeah, I just had one question before. Emma, when you mentioned that you received the scholarship, I'm sure a lot of other women would be interested in, I guess, trying to find out how to obtain that scholarship. How did you, I guess, obtain that scholarship, or how did you find out about it?
Yeah, about the scholarship, as I said, I really didn't study. I did continue with my study after leaving my home country. And I really wanted to study from day one. But now with the support from my family couldn't take me to school or to continue. When I heard about this opportunity, I was like, maybe I can fulfill now my dream. And we had this idea that maybe it's a school, or I'm going to school to study. And when I reached, we did interviews, and I really went through. And it was really something good, whereby they are supporting young marginalized, and I was one of them. I really used this opportunity well, because by that time I was working and I was the one providing for my family. But I was like, no, I should take this opportunity and go and learn something. And that's how I came up with this idea. And that's how they managed to support me with this idea.
I'm so inspired by that. Honestly, it's been so wonderful hearing your thoughts and what you've done so far. So where do you see yourself in, I guess, 5 years? What do you hope to achieve?
In 5 years, okay, when they say how do I see myself? In 5 years, I really don't so much look at myself, but I look at refugees, where every refugee is and where every woman are. That's what I'm looking at, of how I can change the life of women. In 5 years, I really want to see every refugee women, even children, because when we support women, that we are supporting them so that they can support their families and children. I want to see when every refugee child can access schools, medical, and even other needs they need, where refugees can have nice home, go to nice schools, and achieve other things like other people, like other normal people. And I'm looking for when world refugee, like when someone hears refugee, then it's not what they think about how they think refugees have to look like or what they think refugee has to do. In 5 years, I want to see all refugees not marginalized anymore, but strong people in the world.
I totally understand where you're coming from. And I think that part of the social exclusion issues are driven by the perception that the host population has about refugees. So overcoming the stereotyping, overcoming the fear of the other, I think it's a major challenge. But I really do think that businesses like yours go a long way to achieve this objective. So I really think that if enterprises like yours, not only because, you cannot tackle the whole problem of refugees by yourself, but this is a role model. And I really think that this can facilitate economic independence for refugees. And the moment you are economically independent and you are inserted in the social fabric, then it becomes easier to overcome the fact that you are a refugee, you are from a different country, you're different than me. And I think this fear of the other is something that we see in all our countries nowadays. And my message would be that it's not because someone is different than me that I am less who I am. So I think the identity should not be threatened by the arrival of other people. And if anything, we should really invest in identifying commonalities and identifying differences that make us richer and stronger and not weaker. I would like to thank you, Aimé, for your presence here today. I think we have all learned a lot about your story, the situation, and how you are actively tackling a huge problem in your community. So on behalf of all our listeners, who I'm sure will be extremely inspired by what we discussed here today, I would like to thank you. And I hope all of you enjoyed today's discussion. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast across Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts, or your preferred platform. The next episode will drop in the new year. If you want to get in touch, search for the Imperial Women Group on LinkedIn or Instagram. Thank you very much, and I wish you all a good day.